Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
Hi there, and welcome to The Inevitable. This is our new podcast where we're talking about the future of the car. This means everything from electrified vehicles to cars that drive themselves. Where are we going and how will we get there? I'm Johnny Lieberman from Motor Trend, joined by
Ed Lowe, and we are going to talk to some amazing guests. We have Reggie Watts, we have Sung Kang, we have James Marsden, we have Spike Ferriston, Kristen Lee, Derek Jenkins, a whole bunch of actors, celebrities, car crazy folks, people from in and outside the industry. It's going to be great, and you can find it on podcastone.com or anywhere you find you listen to your favorite podcast. We're also doing a video series as well. That's on motortrend.com/theinevitable or on youtube.com/motortrend. Come join us.
Well, Motorator, what do we talk about in this show?
Well, we're going to talk about some record numbers coming from the auction companies, Bring a Trailer and Mecum. We're going to dig into this Noble, a new Noble supercar that they're coming out with, and one of my most recent purchases.
And some hot Chinese food talk.
First,
there's Geico. Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com. Get it on. Got to get on. No choice, but we got a mandate. Get it on. And welcome to CarCast. I'm Adam Carolla. That's the Motorator, Matt DeAndrea, over there.
Man. Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well now. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Yes. Busy. Mm-hmm. Things have been busy. But I got my Toyota like forklift stacker delivered to my warehouse, and it's the coolest piece. As soon as I got it, I started doing things you're not supposed to do, like lift yourself up in the air, and you know, as you would expect.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I oftentimes think about it. A forklift is like one of those things you don't think you need.
Yeah,
but when one enters your life, it's magical.
So mine is instead of a full forklift that you ride on, obviously it takes a lot of space and they can lift a lot of weight, is mine's kind of like a pallet jack, but it's a pallet jack that lifts 10 feet in the air, and it's powered. So you push it around and it's all moves under power, but it's a brand new Toyota unit, and it beeps a lot, makes a lot of noise. It's got flashing lights.
Everything beeps.
It's got lots of flashing lights.
I believe we're heading to a place in the near future where a young child, when he steps backwards after brushing his teeth at the sink, we will hear a beep.
Oh, I think that's where we're going. A reverse camera will go on in his head.
And somewhere I'll be napping and I'll be like, what the fuck? Timmy's backing out of the shower. Oh, God damn it. We're there. Yeah. We're going to have beep belts. We're going to force all kids to wear a belt that has a beeper on it, so when they back up,
yeah,
Jesus,
you know, it's funny because I was thinking about all of the technology in cars that we're putting in, and is it making people lazy? Right, you can't change lanes without, you know, the car beeping or flashing a light or even pulling you back into your lane because you wander off. I get it; it's all safety technology, but even on the way here this morning, one of the things that I've noticed is, I get a lot of people these days don't know how to drive a manual transmission. They don't know how to drive stick. But I would argue a lot of people also don't know how to drive behind a car with a manual transmission. What I mean by that is I'm sitting in traffic. You hit the gas, you jump forward.
You're driving the Mustang.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But every time I push in the clutch and I'm slowing down and I'm downshifting, you think about my brake light is probably goes on half as much as most every other car. Mm-hmm. And we're just so trained to look at the brake lights and not look at the car in front of you. You just see the lights. You know, when you take driving courses, they tell you to kind of look ahead of the car in front of you, look through their glass to the car in front of you, look at their brake lights.
Right.
So what I find is I coast to the car in front of me, or if we're stopped in traffic, my foot's off the brake because I've got a manual. I don't need to, I'm not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. Cars behind me don't understand that I'm not moving. And then they come up behind me and then they jam on the brakes because they didn't see they see I'm not moving. And then they give me a look like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm just driving a manual transmission.
You're kicking it old school, man.
I just can't understand. Like, it just never occurred to me that driving behind somebody in a car that's manual is off-putting to 90% of everyone on the 405.
Yeah. You used to have to give people a little berth because if they were on a hill or something, they were going to drift back 3 feet
These cars don't do that now. They have an electric brake. So when I go up on a hill, I put my foot on the brake, stop the car, and then when I let off and I push in the clutch and let off the brake, it holds the car there.
Have you done launch control on it yet?
I haven't done the launch control on it yet.
What do you think the R's are on a launch control?
On this car, it's also adjustable. Uh-huh. So it has like a rev limiter and like a two-step. So like if you were drag racing and you put slicks on it, you can get more RPMs out of it.
More RPMs out of the launch.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can adjust it. If it's bogging, you can turn it up.
You'd have stickier tires.
Yeah. Right. So I think probably the default setting, I haven't played with it, I'm going to guess is probably around 1900 RPM. And you could
It seems low, but just means you're making good torque, good power.
Yeah. Yeah. But if I heated the tires first and if I was on a prep track, I can probably go 2200, maybe 2100, somewhere around there. Those RPMs also, I think that's what we recalled when we were doing the GT500 launch at the drag strip in Vegas. Mm-hmm. Now, that car with the supercharger makes a lot of torque, very easy to spin the tires. Mm-hmm. So we played around with like an 18, 19, 2000 RPM launches with that car.
All right. What's going on in the car world? Well, big auction.
Big auction.
Big auction.
Mecum just... just wrapped one of their auctions, and they set a world record for an auction: $217 million in total sales from the cars and the memorabilia. The previous record was $176 million, also held by Mecum.
Well, I mean, to be fair to Gooding and RM, Mecum takes place over 17 days.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? These other guys do 1 weekend.
Yeah.
These guys go 11 days or something crazy.
Now, this is what's interesting as well, is we talked about some of these car auctions having a bit of a niche, muscle cars or the high end, the pre-war cars, things like that. You would never really see a lot of cars at Mecum or Barrett that you would see at RM or Gooding. But now it's really starting to blend. So Mecum's top 10 sales, number 10, Mercedes SL Roadster, right?
Yeah, well, just to jump in, and we'll probably circle back to bring a trailer and just computers in general. Anyone who has a phone and has 1.3 million bucks laying around in the sofa knows exactly what one of those Roadsters is worth, and or Gullwing, and or Daytona, and or Ford GT, new or old model, meaning, 05, 06, or 2019, whatever. You know exactly what those cars are worth. So, they used to kind of have this model, which is like, well, you couldn't sell a Gullwing at Mecum. Well, you could if it was $10 cheaper than you could get it at Gooding.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're in the market for a Gullwing, there shall be one, and it'll be determinative of the price.
And actually, I won't go through the whole top 10, but to your point, number 10 was the Roadster, and number 4 on the list was the Gullwing.
Right.
By the way, the Roadster, $1.375 million. The Gullwing, $2.64
million. Yeah. Those cars, so finally, the Roadster and the Gullwings have, I don't want to say flatlined, they've gone up 3%. 2% like every year for the last 10 years or whatever they've been, but they're generally like a bellwether car.
Yeah.
Like you can tell where the market is. How's it doing? Well, how's a Gullwing under $1 million or is it over $1 million? Like I'll tell you how the market is generally doing. The problem with the Gullwing, like we talked about before, there's a handful of like aluminum bodied ones there or something. And sometimes when they're special, you can't compare them to a, you know, there's a couple of Gullwings on Bring a Trailer right now. Oh, no, there's a Gullwing and a Roadster or whatever. And the Gullwing's at like 1,315 or something, and it'll go for 1,430 or something. Yeah. You know, this one at 2,600, I don't think it's the market. I think the 2,600 had something about it.
Right. Yeah. I don't have the descriptions. I just have the list, so we'd have to dig into that a little
bit. Was the Ken Miles car the top seller?
It was the top seller. But by the way, Pagani Huayra, which wouldn't normally see at Mecum, did very well at Mecum. Won 2.1 and change, almost over $2 million. Your Glacier National Park tour bus, $1.43 million. That was number 8 on the list.
I was just looking at that thing because it was like $350 to $550.
Yeah.
And you rarely go million over the estimate.
So the top four was the Gullwing number 4, Ferrari F40 number 3, a McLaren Speedtail number 2, and the Ken Miles GT350R prototype, number 1, $3,750,000.
I don't think you have your VIG application turned on.
This is just an article that was written. So I think they were just doing hammer prices.
Yeah, because and by the way, I don't know. I sort of get it, but I don't know. Why are we just doing hammer prices in this modern world where there's 10 or 12% tacked on? That's the price of the car is what somebody pays for the car. Like it doesn't really matter.
So we're at what, 4.1 million or something?
It's like 4.125 or something. But again, if the VIG is 1% or it's 50%, that's the price. Tack it on. Anyway, so it went over 4.
Yeah, over 4 million. I mean, the McLaren Speedtail, by the way, that was a cool car. RM had one. I went to their place and one of their events and saw it in person. And McLaren's not really known for you know, having a huge resale value. Even you know, the Senna wasn't doing real well in the past couple of years. I mean, it's sticker price, you know, roughly that, but $3.3 million, as you said, you know, it's more like $3.7 million.
Right.
You know, that's good. That's big money for that car. Ferrari F40, again, this is Hammer, 2.75.
Right. So we're into 3 or close to 3.
There was a Shelby 427 on the list at 1.4, so it's 1.
Yeah.
You know, 8.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, not 1.8, but
I'm sorry. Yeah.
It's 1.6. Yeah.
Yeah, 1.6. Yeah, 427 Cobra, you know, pulling over $1.5 million.
Yeah, the Ken Miles 350R, interesting. I've always liked the Rs. I've always kind of said they're undervalued. This one's got a special story, a lot of history. It was the mule car, the first car, the whatever. But it's a Mustang that went over $4 million.
Yeah, the, you know? Flying Mustang is what they nicknamed it.
Yeah, so the Flying Mustang. It's good. Good for the vintage world.
Yeah. But then we get into Bring a Trailer. So Bring a Trailer just set a record for the most expensive Porsche sold online, I believe, and the most expensive car sold online. They sold, I think it was a Carrera GT sold for $1.9 million on Bring a Trailer. So they set some records there. But even more interesting is in 2021, Bring a Trailer's total sales, $828.7 million worth of cars. That's 108% gain over 2020. They did $398 million. They basically did $400 million in 2020, $829 million this past year.
Well, you know, chalk some of that up to COVID, but also...
And limited cars. You can't get new cars. There's massive markups. There's supply chain issues. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of expensive cars. I mean, there's, well, first off, they made their way into the expensive car world, which I always said they should. I always balked at the notion of, well, no one's going to spend $2 million on Bring a Trailer. And I was like, well, if they think they can save 50 grand over RM, then they'll do it. I don't get why they wouldn't. It never, I think people were sort of, you know what the car people were doing? They were kind of treating it like a restaurant, you know what I mean? And so they were saying, I don't care how good the filet mignon steak would be at Arby's. No one's going to pay $50 at Arby's. And that's true.
Yeah, that's true.
But this isn't that. This is something different. And also, Bring a Trailer has this component to it, which is all the car guys, including myself, get up 3 to 5 days a week and just check and see what's popped up.
Yeah.
And when you're doing the auctions, you know, it's like you got Amelia Island coming up in March, right? Once the auction sites, RM, Gooding, whomever, they'll kind of lock off their roster in the next few weeks. Mm-hmm. And you don't need to check every morning to see what has popped up.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. And so for the car guys, it was sort of like the hunt. There's a repetitive notion of you get up in the morning and go, I wonder if anything cool's popped up. 9 times out of 10, it hasn't, but you're still looking for that, what you're looking for. You know what I mean? You have what you want to see pop up. I have what I want to see pop up, and it's always interesting.
I mean, every morning you look for that Bring a Trailer email, and now there's so many other sites that are popping up that are competitors to Bring a Trailer, and there's a handful of them that are really doing well, and they're getting some good cars, and they're starting to get some sales. You know, they're getting good numbers for the same reason you're talking about. Like, if a Gullwing pops up places and enough people know about it, Gullwing is a Gullwing. You know, if you're within, you know, 50 or 100 grand of what the market price is, you may be looking all of a sudden now at Bring a Trailer and two other websites at a Gullwing Roadster and see which one, you know, is going to get you within, you know, 50 to 100 grand of the price you're willing to spend, which is, you know, everybody's on that same dollar amount.
You know, years ago, God, it must have been, geez, I'm trying to think, maybe before my kids were born, I'm trying to think like 05.
Mm-hmm.
I just went on eBay and saw that blue Lamborghini 2+2, 400. And, you know, it had 50 digital photos. One of them was, you know, in primer on a rotisserie, you know, with the thing. And the guy was in Pennsylvania, and I just bought it for 110 grand, sight unseen. It was considered foolish back then. Like, why don't you fly out to Mechanicsburg and go kick some tires? I'm like, I don't know. I just saw 80 digital pictures of the thing. I've seen pictures with the engine being rebuilt. You know, sometimes I'll put in dyno sheets and stuff like that. It's like, I don't know. It looks pretty good to me. Mm-hmm. And I just bought it and then sold it for 760 grand or something a few years later.
Yeah.
But there was, like, I was online. It was digital. It was 15 years ago. Everyone thought it's nuts to spend that kind of money online at the time. It's like you spend over 100 grand. Some car you've never sat in. But I was like, and when it showed up, it looked exactly like it looked in the pictures.
Yeah.
And that was that.
That's it.
And that's probably in my mind when I was like, I don't know why Bring a Trailer's just selling Celicas and 4Runners. Like, why aren't they selling Lambos?
Yeah. I'm sure, you know, there's always a handful of, you know, con men that are out there trying to pull one over or just try to hide some of the flaws. But now we're kind of getting more into, you know, when we look at the listings on like Bring a Trailer and stuff, more people are being good about being forthcoming with the flaws and getting it out there. And then people go, okay, I get it. Now everything else is good.
Yeah, you see pictures of a ding on the door.
Right, for everybody who's legit, they don't want to go through the hassle of, why didn't you tell me about this? Why didn't you do that? They're like, this is the car. This is what it is. I got a little ding here. Got a little this there. That's it. That's what it is. So when you buy it, don't ever call me again.
Super transparent, forthcoming.
Right? Yeah, just make it an easy thing. Because you're always going to feel better going, oh, you know what? He told me about the ding. I knew about the ding. I bought it. Got a fair price for it. And now I get to decide, do I get to fix the ding? Do I leave the ding? But either way, I'm not surprised by it. Like, I get it, you know? So, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, I mean, like I said, you know, Bring a Trailer. I don't know if they put a cap, but sometimes I'll scroll through like 45 pictures and then they'll do the additional 180 if you want to click on this thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's vids of the guy going down the street, throwing some revs or in, you know, if it's a race car, in-car footage of him at Sonoma, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I don't know what more information you need. Now, it doesn't mean you can't buy a car and have the water pump go bad 2 days after you buy it or whatever seems to magically happen
after
like when you move into a condo and the washing machine goes bust like in the first week. Like, I don't know how cosmically this times out, but I've had a lot of that with batteries and like water pumps and stuff. But that is what it is. I mean, if you went and personally examine the car, you wouldn't be able to see the water pump's going to go out 3 days after you buy it. And it was really about, I think it's really about an orientation, education, and acumation. I think I just made that word up. of the buyer. So it's like, but that's how we work.
Yeah.
Acclimation. The word is acclimation. The point is I've lived in this town, you know, a long time. I've done this business for a long time. And the time was, you're living in La Cañada, you got to head down to Fox to have a meeting on some fucking TV show that's never going to see the light of day. Yeah. And I'd be like, why don't we just get on the phone, you know? And they'd be like, yeah, you got to go in. And it's like, why?
Yeah.
And like, yeah, because you have to. And it's like, all right. And now in the last 10 minutes, like, fuck it.
Yeah.
We'll just do it over Zoom.
Yeah, just do it over Zoom.
So basically what happened in this town with pitch meetings and business meetings is essentially what has happened with Bring a Trailer and selling automobiles and online auctions in that last 10 minutes too. People are like, I don't have to go to Scottsdale and get a paddle. No, it's Gooding's running an online, whatever. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
That's where we're at.
Gooding is doing one of their geared onlines in Scottsdale. They're not having a live event. I don't even have the full list of companies that are doing the live event, but it wasn't that long ago, maybe a year ago, less than a year ago, we sat here in the studio with the Gooding guys and, you know, we were a year into the pandemic and now we're in year two and they were saying, hey, our auctions are online. We knew we were going to do it anyway. And at the time, yes, they had customers going, I just spent $1 million online. I wasn't even at the event. Like, I just did it over the phone with you guys. And they're like, I don't know. It's just weird. We never thought we'd sell a car for $1 million online. We never thought we would just do it without a live event. And then turns out even the customers that were kind of shocked to do the transaction, excuse me, they ended up being happy with it and then got real comfortable with it real fast. You know?
Well, you know, we've always had phone bidders. They're not in the room. Now they have a liaison that is in the room, but
yeah, that's the thing. There's usually a guy,
but he's just some dude with a phone.
Well, oftentimes, you know, you would send somebody, like the big spender would send somebody.
Gary Bobloff, go down there,
right,
kick some tires. Yeah. And there's definitely some wisdom in that. Mm-hmm. No doubt about it, but times have changed. And like I said, a lot of it, it's always my parsley by the side of the plate thing. You know, for 80 years, you got a sprig of parsley with your eggs at any diner in the world. And for 30 years, people just looked at the parsley and went, what's that there doing there? And then the folks who put the parsley there just went, well, it's got to be there.
It's got to be there.
It is. Because it is.
Yeah.
Because it was before.
Yeah.
And then at some point, they got rid of the parsley. Now there's no parsley anywhere.
Nobody cares.
And nobody cares. And that's exactly what's going on with buying cars online. I bet
nobody has ever said, where's my parsley on the omelet?
There had to be one veteran, you know, some Korean War veteran, like in 1987 when they started pulling back on the parsley that wanted his fucking parsley.
Did he go nuts, shoot up the place? What's going on?
I hate change. I guarantee when he got his parsley, it was the passive-aggressive handful of parsley, like they do with the ketchup packets.
Shut them down. It was like when your kid smokes, you're like, you smoke the whole pack right now.
No, it's
all
more,
at once.
No, it's more like when you're at McDonald's and you go, oh, can I have a second pack of ketchup for the fries? And they pull out the box and they
throw
them all at you and go, get the fuck out of here. there's your Dunkin' sauce.
That's right.
Like I was like, I didn't want a gallon of it. I just said I want a second one.
Yep. Billions of packets unused, by the way.
So, really?
Yeah. There's data on it now. They're like billions of unused like ketchup packets and Arby's sauce packets just end up in the trash in the landfills. They're trying to come out. You know, now they had the pump with the weird squishy cup.
Uh-huh.
You know, the little like, you know.
Yeah.
They're doing more of that. And
well, you know, it's interesting. Those packets, you could probably divide America. It's an age thing, you know. So my kids are going to get those packets, and the ones they don't use are going in the garbage.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're from my generation, there's a kitchen drawer.
There's a kitchen drawer
that's filled with those packets.
Yeah.
In case there's a power outage that lasts more than a week and you're trapped in your kitchen.
All you got is ketchup.
To live off of Kiko Man sauce in chopsticks that are rubber band together.
Yeah.
Like, it makes no sense. But if you're from my generation, you ain't throwing away those packets.
Yeah.
And my kids will be chucking. I don't know what the over under. Chris, you're young. Do you chuck the packets?
No, they're in a drawer in my kitchen.
Okay, but why the drawer and not the fridge? You know, because like every time I open my fridge, there's the weird like little cubby where you're supposed to put a stick of butter, and it has like the clear plastic hood. That's where you stash the packets.
I didn't know you had to refrigerate soy sauce.
I don't know, but
yeah. No.
But your ketchup packets, like you don't think
if they don't hit
ketchup,
air.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, when I buy soy sauce, it's not refrigerated, so I just never thought to.
Yeah, I never really thought about it.
Now, Ryan, you're even younger.
Do you know what a ketchup packet is?
What do you do with the packets?
Oh, I chuck them.
You chuck them? Do you really? Yeah.
You proved my point. You made my point splendidly.
Well said.
I would never chuck the packets. Yeah. I would never use the packets. I would just never chuck the packets.
I definitely got the chopsticks, especially the chopsticks still wrapped with the napkin and the rubber band around it,
right.
Like the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
Right? Every time you get sushi to go, and if you're by yourself, right, they send you two or three of those things, they're all in the drawer.
I use those to stir my coffee.
Chris, I think age-wise is on the cusp
of
throwing it away, but mentally he's a 67-year-old who survived a depression in the Ukraine, you know, and like he's got the mentality. He eats shrimp tails, you know what I mean? Like, so I would expect you to be an outlier.
Yeah, I think I am.
But
yeah,
I would
all
be.
All my friends think I'm weird for it.
Who's older, you? Fonda Lear's older than you.
He's older than me, yeah.
Fondelier, we should ask Fondelier whether he saves the packets.
Do you collect the packets from anybody else that you're eating with?
No.
No. So they throw theirs away. You don't make a fuss.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I had takeout with other people, but
yeah, that's the point of takeout, right? Yeah. Is you're running through by yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's kind of a thought. But definitely you can't throw away the chopsticks. It seems weird. The chopsticks you can't, and you're right. There's the one Kiko Man that's in there, and then it's got the napkin and the things in there.
What's Fondelier do, Rhino?
Hey, what's up? It's Matt. I'm here.
Oh,
here to tell you in person.
Yeah.
This is actually gonna prove your point even further. I throw them out. However, my wife, who's several years older than me, does keep them.
She keeps them. Yeah.
She will keep them.
So, and she's also foreign born, right?
Yeah, she is not from this land.
So, see, I got to throw out.
You proved both your points. One, that Chris is basically a 67-year-old in a 35-year-old body. And.
Right. Well, so you have to throw out the foreigners because this is kind of an ugly American trait. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. People that know, like, you know, my Hungarian grandfather who fled from the Holocaust, that guy kept anything that had a lid. Yeah. He had a hard time throwing out a mayonnaise jar because it was glass. It had a metal lid. You could screw it on. Like, this got to be worth something. I mean, I'm not going to sell it, but I'm going to use it. You could put goulash in here and then freeze it.
The only way to get rid of it would be if you're going to someone's house and you're bringing something, like something you made, then it's their problem. Right. If you brought like the takeout Tupperware and you brought somebody pancakes or meatballs or something, if you made something in the jar, you know, and they're like, now the jar is yours, out of my hands. I just gave you homemade jelly, but it's in a mayonnaise jar from 3 years ago. Like, now it's your problem.
Always a little crust at the top. What would you say the over under is on the age of the throw out American?
Yeah, that's a good one. It's high. It's late 30s, 38, 39.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. I was going to just put it at 40 just to round it off, but I got the 38, 39 as the Mason-Dixon line of the throw stuff out, keep stuff.
Yeah, because that's where Tammy is as well. Like every takeout Tupperware thing and chopsticks, it's stacking up. It just keeps stacking up. I just bring them to the shop and use them for nuts and bolts and cleaning parts. Like, you know, the black one with the, you know, because now they're pretty decent. You know, they're microwavable. They're black with the clear top and it says microwavable. It's like a big rectangle. Yeah. Like, those are all pretty good now. Now you can like wash parts and stuff in them.
Let me give you guys one more Chinese takeout trope. And then we'll get back to cars. Every TV show, movie, I go back to Woody Allen. I think it was Crimes and Misdemeanors, maybe Annie Hall, whatever. They always had that tableau of Woody Allen. You could picture him on a date. You know, they go, "Oh, it's raining. Let's just order some takeout." And watch an Ingrid Bergman movie or they're like, "Oh, it's a late night in the writer's room. Like, order some takeout." Friend's apartment kind of thing. And then at some point they'd cut to the paper container that the wonton came in or that the Szechuan came in, and then the chopsticks, and everyone just sort of eating their own thing out of the container.
Out of the square bucket with the flaps.
No one's done that. Nobody does that. You order six things, then you get the plate, and you get, I'll have a little pork fried rice, and a little beef and broccoli, and a little Emperor Pao's chicken over. Like, do you just get one container and just sit with chopsticks and eat? And then how would that work with your wife? Like, oh, no, this is my container. But I wanted some beef and broccoli. Well, you should have ordered it. You got the Szechuan chicken.
They
got
to pass the family style when you order Asian food.
Right. Yeah, right.
But you know the Manhattan apartment, you know, guy sitting, maybe there's the lonely tableau, like he's sitting home on a Saturday night. Mm-hmm. There's the date night, keep it intimate, we're staying home. There's the late night, oh, we got to put this script to bed before we, you know, we ordered Chinese.
Yeah.
I've never seen anyone do that in real life.
Yeah.
I've only seen it in movies and TV shows and sitcoms.
Now there's COVID. Nobody shares. But do they still have the little square buckets with the flaps that has like the little metal handle?
The right? metal handle, because of the microwave, is an utter shit show.
Yeah. That never would work.
That would never work.
So you'd have to, yeah.
So this is a 100%. This is fabricated by Hollywood, this sitting around with your Chinese food.
I always thought it was like a New York thing.
It feels New York-y, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But the shit's filmed in, Studio City. They're just going, this is New York.
They're also thinking like you are, Chris. They're going, this is probably what they do in New York. Right?
I didn't realize it's a New York thing from LA.
Yeah, someone in Hollywood's going, in New York, I think they do it this way. They must do it this way. Because I've seen it in other movies and we don't do it here. So it has to be in New York. So they can just keep doing it. Right?
It's the parsley thing. It's perpetrated.
Like, it's like the parsley thing. They just keep doing it.
No one's ever done it.
Nobody told them to say no.
Who eats Chinese food without putting it over a bed of rice? Because then you just have the container with the rice.
Okay. Chinese food by nature is a little over seasoned sometimes, and you step on it with the rice, and that's the perfect part. You make the little bed of rice, and then you scoop the chicken and snow peas or whatever, and it kind of bleeds down a little, and then you get that sort of hot and cold kind of
sweet. Yeah, dilutes the saltiness.
Yeah, right. Nobody just sits there.
Right. Also, to your
point,
Ryan,
later on when I bring this up to Brian, he will explain that last night he ordered a cardboard container of Chinese food and sat alone and ate
And no rice, because you're right. Nobody eats, like in the movies, nobody gets the rice. It's always like the noodles.
Where's the rice?
Nobody gets the rice.
They never show him putting the rice into the top of the container.
Yeah.
It's a travesty. This is the biggest lie of my life.
Maybe there's no rice in New York.
Yeah. it's a travesty. All right.
All right. Anyway.
You got a new car.
I did. You know, we talked about it a little bit, but...
you got a new car from 1992.
I did. So, yes, I bought another Mustang. It's another Fox Body Mustang. Yeah. You know, the story, sort of the short story to it, because we got it into it a little bit this week with Goldberg as well, is before Ford made the 93 Cobra, there was a similar car made by the Shelby American Automobile Club. And it was called the SAC, S-A-A-C, MK1, the Mark 1. They had a Mark 1 and a Mark 2. And they worked with Ford, and Ford threw their performance parts catalog at a GT40 hedge, GT40 intake, 5-lug conversion, disc brakes.
5-lug conversion?
Yeah.
It's funny. I always think of American as 5-lug anyway, but I guess that's a Chevy thing.
And they went to, you know, Ford started with 5 lugs on the Mustang, and then they went to 4 lugs, and then went to 5 lugs again.
That's why I'm confused. I think American and Ford, American and Mustang is 5, but anyway, here we go.
Anyway, it was a very, very cool car, and technically it was, although a Ford Mustang, the VIN number was assigned to the Shelby Car Club, the manufacturer that they owned at the time. So it had their window sticker. It was registered as a SAC Mark I. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a Ford. So anyway, it was kind of cool. But it was expensive at the time. It was $41,000. When the 93 Cobra came out, it was like $22,000. And this was basically the tuner guy version of it, although it had a manufacturer VIN. Mm-hmm. And they did the leather on the inside and 4-point roll cage. And the plan was to make about 250 of these cars. And they were only going to be sold to SAC Club members, to SAC members.
Mm-hmm.
They made the first year... were only Wimbledon white with the blue stripes. And then the next year, to kind of up the appeal, they did a red version, a black version, and the white version. And a few other couple things, a handful of convertibles and stuff. And I just remember seeing the car in the 90s before we even knew what the Cobra was and going, this is the coolest car. This is the coolest Fox Body Mustang you can buy from a dealer showroom floor. When the 93 Cobra came out.
How equivalent to a Celine would it be?
So
in principle.
Yes. Yeah, so pretty similar. Actually, very similar. However, Celine, like companies like Celine and Roush and Steeda, they didn't have that manufacturer status yet.
They didn't.
Right. So they were selling cars with a tuner package on it, a post-title package. Uh-huh. The SAC car was interesting because it was technically registered as a SAC car.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of the big difference, and certainly in collectability. It got their own serial numbers and stuff. They wanted to make 250 cars. Then the 93 Cobra was coming out, all the press around that, and all of a sudden they're like, it's the same thing or similar for half the cost. So they ended up making 65 of these cars.
Mm-hmm.
I just found number 50 with 3,600 miles on it and nice. Was able to get it. As I was making the deal on this car, two 93 Cobras sold at Mecum. Mm-hmm. Low mile cars. One's like 860 miles. The other one's like 2,000 miles or under 2,000 miles. They each sold for $110,000.
Wow.
And there's 5,000 of those made. Obviously, I have cars. I love the Cobra. But, you know, these SAC cars don't come up often, and you've got to wait years, sometimes 20 years to find them. And then also, are you in a place where you're able to buy it? Anyway, just try to make a deal. So the thing I was gonna ask you, ask the listeners, has anybody done the dry ice blasting yet? The dry ice cleaning, like cleaning your engine or cleaning the undercarriage of the car, all underneath it. The dry ice looks fantastic. It's not a steam clean, and it's not a sand blast, and it just removes all of the like surface rust, grime, grease, dirt, and it just comes out beautifully. I've seen a bunch of like vintage cars, the backs of like Porsche's rear engine low, dirty, greasy. They put on the hazmat suit and they do the super cold dry ice cleaning, and it just cleans everything off. It looks like brand new metal when it's done. It doesn't harm the paint or anything. It's a really cool process. It's just starting to catch on.
Yeah, right? So everyone knows soda and walnut shells and sand and stuff like that. Now, I'm thinking dried ice for the mess.
Yes,
And I know that doesn't seem like everyone's first thought, but you want to get some media, whatever it is, soda, walnut shells, and you do a blasting. It's a fucking shit show.
You could luck getting it out of all the nooks and crannies.
Right. So my first impulse is the dried ice.
It's just water at that point.
Right. It might not be any better than soda. It's just there's nothing to clean up.
Right. I think it's arguably less abrasive, but I think the cleaning property of it is the extreme cold. You know, like if you basically froze or super cooled grease and oil and then gave it a blast of wind or something, that's probably what breaks it all up. That's probably what's creating, you know, again, I'm not a chemist here, but there's got to be some effect other than a pressure washer, right? This is more than a pressure washer. The results seem to be better, but it's not inexpensive. It's like to do an undercarriage, I don't know, $1,000 to $2,000 to do all underneath the car.
So the no mess is kind of a residual. And yeah, if you go with a media blast, you're just going to find that in the nooks and the crannies for the next 10 years.
Yeah,
no amount of pressurized air is going to get that out of there. So you don't have the residual mess. You don't have the mess in the nooks and the crannies of the car. You don't have the mess on the ground. Mm-hmm. You have a wet spot. But the cooling is kind of interesting because, if you were trying to get tar off of your shoe and it was a warm day, good luck.
Yeah.
And sometimes when people try to remove some tar from a carpet or chewing gum from a carpet or something, they'll freeze it.
Yeah,
hit it with the Freon, whatever, and then they can pop it off.
Exactly, right.
Interesting.
I think that's kind of the process. So I'm trying to learn more about it, trying to find somebody in L.A. that might do it. Because obviously the car is low miles and it's in good shape, but it was an East Coast car. So surface rust always on the drive shaft, on the rear diff. And, and to be able to just go underneath and detail the car out.
Well, if it had an aluminum rear diff or aluminum rear diff cover, maybe it does.
It doesn't have
stamped and diff
and
cover
and steel. Steel drive shaft.
Yeah, see, it's still a Mustang.
Yeah, steel drive shaft. Yeah, well, I didn't pay $4 million for the car. I paid significantly less than what those Cobras.
Get one of those nice finned aluminum diff covers. Those always look good.
Well, Ford makes plenty of them. I probably got three of them at home, so that's an easy
swap. Sure, it'll leak, but put it on anyway.
Well, a lot of the newer ones, you can get, with an O-ring, or you just put the silicone. Everybody does the gasket, but you just do the silicone bead.
I've got to tell you, in my world, this stamped steel sheet metal, it bugs the shit out of me.
Yeah.
And One of the things I could never stand seeing is the valve covers out of the stamped,
yeah,
and the diff cover out of the stamped.
Yeah,
I was like, I don't like that.
Our friend Gail Banks will talk to you for an hour about diff covers because he's making diff covers now, but his theory about like all these diff covers that are finned and whatever, and he goes, it's supposed to be cooling effect and stronger. He goes, it's all bullshit. And he made like clear diff covers so he can see the fluid in them. Mm-hmm. And then he put temperature gauges all over it. And then he created new diff covers that supposed to work. Leave it to Gail Banks to significantly over engineer a diff cover.
Well, that's why we love him. All right, last story. Noble is adding another car to its lineup.
Noble. So the M600, which is, it's got like a big Volvo V8 in it, I think.
I got to see that car.
Look at
Is Noble a kit car or what do we call it?
So
want to be called a kit car.
Yeah, but. So it kind of started out that way, kind of like a super performance car. You buy the car, you buy the engine, somebody's got to mate them together. And then the company was sold a while ago. So the M600's been out since like 2010. And the small company, 8 people, they're British company. They sell these turnkey cars, but somehow they're doing, you know, whatever they need to do to not have airbags and ABS brakes, whether a production run is very small or whatever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But they wanted to come out with a less expensive, more comfortable, more conventional type of sports car. So they came out with the M500. So bring up the M600 and then the M500. It's a good looking car. It's got some McLaren MP4 12C with Ferrari 488 headlights. When you see the car, let me know if you see that. The engine they're using on the M500 is they're using the 4GT EcoBoost V6, 550 horsepower.
And compact.
Which is a great engine. And they're saying it's going to be a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more shoulder room. The M600 is a full carbon fiber body. This is a fiberglass body, but with a carbon fiber option. So if you want to spend more money.
Chris, I don't have a signal on the upper set. Maybe that's...
Oh, yeah. The TV's...
Maybe that's an issue.
No signal. Yeah.
What do you think the sticker is?
So the M600, I think, is still around 275. This is 206, around low 200s.
Uh-huh.
But I guess if you wanted it and you wanted to add the carbon fiber body to it, you're probably somewhere in the 240 range. It's probably 20 or 30 grand to add the carbon fiber body to it. But I kind of like the idea of the 4GT engine. But... you know, they're a small car. It's kind of like, do you want a Lotus that's even more special and maybe faster? Mm-hmm. It kind of fits in that realm. But now that you're talking about the low to mid 200 range, it's starting to be a pretty competitive category, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you can get, you know, Porsche Turbo, 911 Turbos in that range. You can, you know, you can arguably get, you know, entry level, you know, Ferraris and Lamborghinis and Aston Martin Vantage is, and you know, so it's, you know, that low to mid 200 range is getting a pretty competitive range.
Yeah, we're just getting to the story now. Do you want a story? Do you want to pull up at Cars and Coffee with some other sort of baseline McLaren in orange, or do you want to do something that's a little off the beaten path? You know,
yeah.
Yeah, it's got a little McLaren, it's got a little Ferrari in the front end.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of entering that zone of all cars are shaped on the computer now, and they're all essentially taking on the same form. You know?
It's good looking, though.
It's good looking.
I think it looks a lot better than the M600. Look up the Noble M600, please.
Uh-huh.
I think it looks a lot better. I know the M600's been out for, you know, 10, 12 years now, and... I just think it's got a little more of a kit car-ish kind of feel to it, a little bit more of a look to it.
Noble goes out and races too, don't they?
Yeah,
or am
they
I thinking
do.
Of somebody else. Yeah. Well, anyway, good. I wonder how many they're going to produce.
I don't know. They must have to cap it, right? Otherwise, you got to crash test it and do airbags and you know, so there's got to be some rule on what you're doing there.
And it may be different in Europe than it is in the States. All right. I'll be at the Brea Improv February 6th with Shatner and Dennis Quaid. You can check that out. Spokane, Washington coming up in February, and Tacoma 18th and 19th, and going to going to Waukegan, Illinois, March 10th. You just go down to Corolla.com for all the live shows. What do you got, Matt?
I'll post some pictures of the new SAC car up on my social media at Motorator, so give me a follow.
Yeah, it's a cool piece. So, till next time, Adam Carolla for Matt, the Motorator DeAndrea, saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.